smart talk all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, Bahamas. It is Tuesday, February the 16th, 2021, and you're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm Erin Green, and you're on the clock. We're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow 612. You can also download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices, and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our feed right there, video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. Text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-GR96, that's 422-4796, powered by BTC, standard text rate supply. Call us, 323-6232, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4316 or 326-4259. Welcome to Guardian Radio. You're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. I want to send a special shout out to all those people this morning who were walking in the road with their phones in their hands, heads deeply buried inside them, daring life to strike them down. I'd like to send a special shout out to the woman who was driving this morning. She's doing a very good job. She had a hands-free device set up on her dash. The only problem is she couldn't stop looking at the device as she was talking. I want to send a special shout out to you. All I'm going to say is please do a little better just for yourself, because I can't take it. My heart can't. You're making me an old woman. I can't take it. You'll have me in the road sending up prayers for your safety. I ain't ready for that yet. All my prayers are dedicated to little children and tamarind trees right now. So you got to do your best to take care of yourself, because I can't share. And I have one small prayer I put in aside for the FNM party, because who knows what they doing? Listen, I am okay, here's what I'm saying. As a political advocate and a social justice advocate, I was very excited at what appears to be a new political strategy, right? And I think to myself, okay, are we really shifting the political culture? Because never in the history of the Bahamas that I know or could remember, I ain't got the best memory, right? Who doesn't ratify incumbents? And in this current political climate where ain't nobody sure who getting reelected, they say we don't even know if Minnis gonna ratify himself, right? Who is not ratifying incumbents? But put that aside, right? Because I'm interested in that. But what's more concerning is, are you going to tell us why you are not ratifying particular incumbents? You see, it's not just enough to not ratify them. You got to tell us why. I think we deserve to know. Otherwise, you're not really shifting the political culture at all, are you? I die in for this thing called transparency. And let me show you something. You know what the worst part is? The worst part is, it's across the civil service. You get people who understand it, understand the client's demand for it, and they can't give it. You know, like they can't even give you the information to help you understand why you can't do the thing you're trying to do today. Right? And so that's, you know, that's why they tell us so-and-so in here with the key, you know. That's a lie. It's a good one. It's a good one. Because you can't fight nobody over that. If I was on vacation, do not call me. You should have made a duplicate before I left, right? But I really want to know, is the F&M party going to tell us why these particular incumbents won't be ratified? Is there an accompanying investigation? Was there a breach of parliamentary procedure? Was there a breach of the law, right? Was there a breach of party rules? And see, that's important because like an instance like Houston Moultrie, the Speaker of the House, right? He argues that he is resigning because he is obligated first and foremost, or he is prioritizing his obligation first and foremost to the Constitution, to the rule of law, and to the nation as a whole, versus to his party. While others argue that he is prioritizing his obligation to self over party, and he is upset because the party is not treating him the way that he should be treated as the Speaker of the House in particular, and I imagine as a member of the party. Right, but see, here's my thing. If you're not ratifying him, is it because of the stance that he's taken in the House? Is it because of his attitude towards women in the House, the misogyny that manifests, right? Is there a breach in the constituency? Are constituents not happy, and have they formally expressed to you, the party, to remove him from the ticket? So I think we have the right to know. Now, here's another instance. You see, Mr. Peter Turnquest. It appears as if he's not getting a ratification either. But I would like to know exactly why he's not getting the ratification, because here's why. I actually think Peter Turnquest could make a good chairman of the party. Possibly, right? Because, you know, he's a little bulldogish, and that's what you need. You need a little bulldogish man. Well, not man, person, right? Because it could be a woman, and it should be a woman. Let me tell you how neat and organized and structured the thing could be. But yeah. Anyway, imagine, because the chairman of the party is just as important as the leader of the party, especially if that party is in power, because the leader of the party becomes PM, and the leader of the party controls, the PM controls ministers, right? People in the cabinet. The chairman, though, still has a large degree of control over MPs and members of the party. And so with that tension, right? With that, if there is tension, which there should be, with that tension, you could prevent a prime minister behaving or pushing on the edge of dictatorship, right? You could prevent a prime minister using the provisions available to him to operate a virtual dictatorship by compelling the MPs and other members of the party to hold a particular line, right? So maybe Peter Turnquest could be chairman of the party, but I still need to know why he wasn't ratified specifically. Right? Because like I say, there's plenty of reasons why you could not or would not ratify Moultrie, but the government just get up in the House and say, hey, oh no, we're not supporting this vote of no confidence, even though the boy talk about us bad, even though he say he's been in the part of a 7-month constructive withdrawal from the party. We give him a vote. In fact, they went as far as to say, look, a democracy ain't been as sweet as this till the boy come here. Look what he's done. So tell me, with all of that praise, why are you not ratifying him? And if his words are correct in today's, you know, if his words are correct, why you offer him a flight to London? Boy, look here. So I'm coming right now. I just, look here, this newspaper this morning is fascinating. See, because I'm looking at this list of pictures here, and I only see two people who could jump up and go to work right away. I only see two people here that don't really have questions to answer. Or for me, I will sit back and listen to their constituents tell me what they want to do. Because I have been impressed with what I've seen and what I've heard, right, from them as ministers or them as members of the government, appointees or chairpersons, right? And that's Cartwright and Pintaud. Now, I'm not saying that y'all are horrible performers, right? What I am saying is it appears as if y'all been following Frankie Campbell's lead, minding your own business for 6 months and staying out of other people's business for 6 months, because I don't know what you've been doing. Anyway, I was running on a little bit this morning. I love to see politicians' faces plastered all over my newspaper with no reason for why they should be there. It gets me excited. But I have to start my show. And so, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to introduce my guest, and then I'm going to read my intro. Because I should have given him the right to engage the little intro just now. So, my guest this morning is Mr. Stephen Evans, and he is a local social justice activist and advocate. He hosts an online, this is what I call it, an online community teaching session, regular session called Freedom Fridays. And the next topic for that program is Let's Talk MPs. And so I thought, this is the person who I want to talk about what appears to be this political culture shift and what hopefully is, like, we are on the cusp of a voter culture shift. And Stephen is a young Bahamian professional who is, I think, a volunteer and committed to positive national development. And I have him here because almost 20 years ago, when I was a member of CAFRA, Caribbean Association for Feminist Research and Action, Teresa Moxie Ingram graciously hosted me as a guest on her show for National Women's Week to talk about what I call the top 10 questions every woman should ask candidates before they vote. But see, for decades, Bahamians have tried to get voters to interrogate candidates directly about their opinions and positions on the most pressing issues before voting, and shifting the political and voter cultures that usually result in us voting for party versus the most qualified candidates. We have to stop believing in and being swung by fancy manifestos. I wonder how many party candidates also believed in their party and party manifestos. I wonder, in fact, how many you think have read the party manifestos. Now, no, I know you're all saying, but Dorian, and then COVID, what's the government to do? Two unprecedented events in recent history. But I'm less concerned about a sorely incomplete political agenda and more concerned about a complete and utter disregard for the people to whom these promises were made. I know you can, look here, y'all can't keep the power on every day. My expectations are measured for your performance, your deliverability, right? See, when Lester Cox had the guest on talking about deliverology, the science of delivering what you promise, right? I laugh because I say white people is make up words and they wouldn't let me make up words. But that's a real thing, and y'all politicians need to get into it. It's not about not delivering, though. It's about the no apologies, the barely an explanation, no realistic timelines, and just more and more hollow promises. Because I bet you can find the Oban file before you liberalize recreational cannabis use, right? Just promise. Anyway, we don't get honesty, we don't get accountability, and we don't get transparency. Just MPs and ministers that toe the party and cabinet lines, respectively. Now, someone out there is screaming right now, not all MPs. But I bet you there's an MP singing in Parliament right now, too. So, yeah. Don't worry. I've heard that you are a wonderful woman. Don't mind me cracking joke on you this morning. Just stop singing in cabinet. Because it appears as if you are literally singing for your supper. If you want to serenade somebody, go serenade a tamarind tree, please. They need love. Fruit trees need love. Anyway, I did not mean to make you laugh in such a fashion. Let me throw out some questions for my audience, and then I'm going to get to my questions for you. So, audience, while you're listening to Stephan and I engage for a few minutes, think about these questions. Are you voting party or are you voting candidate? And why? Did you have a say in your party's choice of candidate? Do you think candidates and aspirants are sufficiently informed about constituency issues and voter concerns? That's a big one. Do you think they have sufficient legal literacy, knowledge about parliamentary procedures and constitutional principles, and leadership experience to represent their constituents, uphold the Constitution, and advance the party agenda? And with that question, I think the Speaker of the House is a perfect example of the tensions between those struggles. But my question for Mr. Evans to start the show is, what is Freedom Fridays?
All right. Well, good morning, Bahamas. Erin, I'm so excited to be here, and I thank you for having me on today. Like you, the stories that are on the front of this paper are interesting. I'll just say interesting for now. But let's talk about Freedom Friday. So once again, I'm Stephan Evans. I'm actually the engagement coordinator at the Organization for Responsible Governance, and we thank you for lots of work that you've done with us in the past. I've only been with the organization for the past year, but what I recognized was beyond the amazing work that we'd already been doing was the need for us to have a space for citizens to come in and just talk about matters related to governance. We have worked with civil society organizations, and we have had leaders from government, political leaders, come on and experts in different areas talk about the work that we do. But I realize, why don't we just open up a space for citizens to be able to come on and talk about what's happening? Mm-hmm. Because we're often overlooked. We're the people that are putting our leaders in position. And this is from no political perspective. That's just the way it is. When we vote, we use our democratic voices to say who we want to lead us. So we should have an opportunity to talk about how we feel and what we know and what we don't know and begin to explore those things. And on the heels of the upcoming election, one of the things that we realized was now more than ever, we need to create spaces where it's amazing that you talked about the top 10 questions women should ask candidates before they vote. But in that very same train of thought, we wanted to make sure that we got an understanding of how did we get here? How do we end up in this place where we put people in their place and now the tables have completely turned from persons coming to us as those that are in the position of power to make the decision on the way forward to almost this state of, as you would have said, virtual dictatorship, where it almost seems like our voices have been stripped away. And a very important question that we're actually seeking to answer through this upcoming topic on this online forum, Freedom Fridays, and the other ones that are to come, are we only powerful when it is election season? Mm-hmm. In a democracy where the people are supposed to make the decisions, are there other ways that we can demonstrate our citizen power, where we can get our leaders to understand what it is that we're going through so we no longer have to hear ludicrous statements about the state of unemployment or the state of the people that don't match the reality that you and I see when we go home, is the only time we can steer the course of the country or set the pace or make demands is election season. What are the other things that we can do? But understanding that the election and voting is one of the most important ways that we express our democracy, We need to be prepared for the next election. We need to think about who our members of parliament are. We need to think about what our expectations of them are. Mm-hmm. And beyond the manifestos, we need to begin to see some more tangible plans, because what we're going through is not a secret. You don't need the greatest researcher to come and do this comprehensive 15-year plan trying to figure out, well, what's going on with the Bahamian people in this community or that community, and what do they need? Why shouldn't the expectation of incumbents and aspirant representatives, those who are going to put their name, there's a long list of independents, there's a very, very long list of parties that are now forming. What are some of the things that we really need to be thinking about in terms of shifting this voter culture so that it becomes a process by which we make a decision on who we want and follow them and hold them to their promises the entire way? Have we accepted? Have we become okay with the way that things have been going? And an important thing, is this just a millennial thing? Should only the millennials want change? I'm honestly, as a millennial, I'm tired of hearing that only the millennials want to see change. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't the persons that have come before us and paved the way, shouldn't the persons who have been around during majority rule and seen all of these phenomenal things happen, shouldn't they be a part of those that are leading the charge as well? Shouldn't we as Bahamian people, watching our brothers and sisters suffer, especially now, every day, think to ourselves, if ever a time when we needed to focus on what really is an MP? What is it? Mm-hmm. Because it's not what we've said it is.
Yeah.
It's not someone who stands on the behalf of anyone. And if we look at the track record of all of the persons who have stood in the halls of parliament.
Well, I will argue that it's not what the politicians have told us that it is. And too long we've allowed the politicians to tell us what their job is versus us using the Constitution and our mm-hmm. good sense, mm-hmm. right, and our community linkages to determine what the MP's job is. So, for instance, the political culture and the political narrative have convinced people that your MP is doing a good job if he bring you a turkey and a ham, right, at the end of the year, except we know that MPs don't raise turkeys and hams, except for maybe one MP I know, a former MP I know, because he's raised animals, right? But that ain't, first of all, that ain't no big deal. First of people, like, y'all get impressed by that. You get impressed by seeing 200 people line up to pick up their turkey and their ham. If you know how much turkey and ham get imported in this country every year, you'd realize that ain't no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to be impressed about,
mm-hmm.
right?
Precisely. And I guess the fact of the matter is, I said something recently, whether it's a visitation of what exists or a revisitation of that thing, mm-hmm. quite frankly, many of us just do not know what it's really supposed to be. Many of us just don't understand how to exercise the power that the Constitution gives to us as the citizens. And so we just really need to pause and figure out what that is, right, and then determine whether or not we're satisfied with that.
Because look here, we got a lot of power, you know.
Yes, yeah, we do.
And so first things first, I'm one of the first people to say that, look, I don't believe the rhetoric that if you don't vote, you don't have a voice.
I don't believe it either.
I don't believe that rhetoric. But in this political culture that is dictated or narrated by the political class, right, your voice seems to be diminished if you are not a part of the voting process, right? See, as an advocate, as an LGBTI rights advocate, as a matter of personal safety, and even, you know, if for only one person I was advocating for myself, I realized that I had to move outside of that aspect of the political system and advocate in a different way for shifts, right? So, like, we got that power. You don't just have to vote. But even in the voting process, right?
Yeah.
We have the capacity to change the way we vote, hopefully that would result in shifting the culture. Spoiling the ballot, right, is one of the first examples. So you're going to register to vote, because you should register to vote. Registering to vote has nothing to do with politicians. You ain't giving them a win. This is another method of entrenching yourself in the system, especially if you have children. I say this to young men, young women all the time. If you got children, go get your voter's card.
Yep.
You don't have to vote, but you need to have that card. It's another measure of identity in a system that could easily lose you.
Precisely.
Right?
Precisely.
But just because you have a voter's card don't mean you have to vote. But you could vote, that don't mean you have to vote for one of these by them. Right? As people say, well, go on, you're going to say something.
Well, I'm just thinking that some of the things that we need to think about is this system has not only set us up to fail, but the system has also set up our leaders to fail. And I think if we can all come to the common understanding that it's not working for any of us, we would begin to think beyond what does voting mean. We would begin to think, what does the next day or the first 100 days, as they say, in office, what does that look like? What are some of the things that need to change so that our voices can be exercised beyond the vote itself? Because like mm-hmm. you said, it's a very powerful tool by which we can create change. But in a system where it's okay that you vote, even if you do vote based on promises sometimes, there's nothing that bounds our leaders to those promises. And so they can come back with whatever they want to come back with to convince us to vote for them again versus being measured against what they said they would do. You understand that voting was only a step in a bigger process that needs to change in order for us to see the progress that we don't want to see progress. At this point, we absolutely need change.
It's not a matter of desire.
No.
It's a necessity.
Absolutely.
A matter of survival.
Absolutely.
People. We have bastardized the Westminster system so much that not only do we operate a virtual dictatorship, I emphasize strongly virtual dictatorship, because the real balance lies in the interaction of party and government, right? Like that's where it's not like they break in the rules outright and waving it in our face, but they have created a political culture that suggests to politicians that to survive, you gotta follow the party line. Right, that's why one of the questions I want to ask, like when I read this headline this morning, it says, in a statement last night, the FNM said the incumbents will help advance the party's agenda. Now, it goes on to say, which at its core will ensure the continued building of a better Bahamas. Right? Like, I don't know, it goes on. And that's not the first time they said that and then followed it up with that, right? But why you keep calling it the party's agenda? Why isn't it the people's agenda, since it's the people's time? And it really suggests to me that the political culture that they are entrenched in has convinced them that it's theirs. The thing is theirs, and they can have it, right? So I want to ask you this. The question is, what do you think? Well, like, yeah, one question. I can throw this out to the audience as well. Please mm-hmm. call in. One question. If you got one question to ask your aspiring MP, right? What would you ask him? My question is, how are you going to balance? So I had to write it out. It's so complicated, MPs. It could be hard. And it don't even have nothing to do with how you can balance fruit trees and roads, right? Like, I ain't even worried about that. But my question is, how are you going to balance the obligation to Constitution mm-hmm. with the obligation to your constituents, with the obligation to the party, with the obligation to your personal principles? And now listen, this is serious. Mm-hmm. That's like, who you gonna give the first piece of cake to?
Yeah.
Your mommy, mm-hmm. your wife, mm-hmm. your daughter, or your granddaughter? Can you stand to look up in their face? And do you know how to cut a slice of cake evenly into four pieces? Right? Have you prepared them? Anyway, that's my question. What's your question?
Well, right now, I have so many, but based on what I've been thinking about lately, I would really ask, what is your plan for your budget, your annual plan? And the reason I ask that is because there has been a lot of talk about what the budget is. Many people feel it's not enough. I feel it's not enough per constituency. This $100,000 a year or whatever it really is. However, it really works. And the reason I ask that at the MP level is because if you know that the resources are limited, the way that you allocate that will show where your heart is. And it will also give us a mechanism by which we can hold you accountable, because you have people that live in particular constituencies, because I've volunteered with constituency offices, with community programs. I've never really been into politics. And when I have engaged with people on the ground or online and see the things that they're saying, it's like some people will benefit from what this thing is that's happening and other people won't, and some people will. And I'm not a fly-by-night kind of guy. I'm a very strategic kind of person. And so if we all know going in that your resources are limited and that you have to use them on all of us, can you not sit even before the election, before the campaign season, or even for those that are going into office that understand what the current system is in place, you know what you're going to be working with. If you base your promises off of something, at least starting at that tangible point, you can set a better expectation of yourself for yourself. Mm-hmm. Of yourself for your people. We can look at where the gaps are, where it's just totally not going to be enough resources based on the large number of constituents that you have.
Yeah.
And it gives us the footing that we need to now work together to come up with a case to say, okay, well, you need to now go when you go to the House and tell them that we need more money.
Yeah.
You can't just get up and say things like that. We need more this, we need more that, and then expect to take from the people's money more when we're already skeptical about where the money is going. Show us what your plan is.
You've got to overcome the trust deficit.
Yeah.
Listen, I got a caller. Let's go to this call. Caller, you're on the clock. Oh, sorry. Just got a green light. I feel like that's the universe telling us we're doing a good job. Right? So let me go to these. You want to take us to a break, Kermit? Yeah, let's go to a break. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to read these texts, but listen, my listening audience, I got some questions for you. I see the text, but are you voting party or candidate or why? And another yes. important question, do you want your MP to be a cabinet minister or not? And why?
That's a good one.
We'll be right back.
If you are 65 or older, it is important for you to get immunized. Immunizations are not just for children. As you age, you are more at risk for illnesses like pneumonia. The pneumococcal vaccine protects against certain pneumonias and boosts your immunity. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider for more information. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Prevent disease. Immunize, please. This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
It takes a village to raise a child, and it takes each and every one of us to grow the Bahamas. On the clock, we dive into the stories, we identify the issues, and we engage the people, organizations, and institutions that keep the country running. On the clock with Aaron Green, weekdays 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
COVID-19, do not panic, be prepared. If you plan to travel, keep updated on travel advisories from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Be sure to wash your hands often and have travel-sized hand sanitizers and disinfecting wipes readily available. Keep your distance from persons who are coughing and sneezing. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. This can help protect you from COVID-19 infection and other respiratory diseases.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning, Bahamas. And no more good yawning this morning. In fact, I want to remind you to get active. You can get up, get out, and get active. 4 platforms to enter. Over 40 winners will be announced. Take your photo or video with a copy of the Nassau Guardian. Log on to guardiantalkradio.com. Click on the Get Active link. Download and invite your friends and family to vote on your entry, and you can win. Remember, promotion ends February 26th. And every day in the paper, The Guardian has been leaving a Get Active 2021 tip. You can. Tip number 12 is change your diet. Think of food as fuel. Eat balanced meals. Do not skip breakfast. Now, when I think of food as fuel, right, I think, okay, run up in that tamarind tree, eat two tamarind, run back down and out them people's yard until you find the next tree. Food for fuel, right? But look here, eating local is a great way to ensure that your food is fuel, because eating in local and in season, right, your environment is giving you what you need at the time. That's the perfect fuel. So remember to get active. So Stefan, let's get to these texts. Now, my first text, I'm going to read this, is somebody who is looking for breadfruit. Yeah, see, you're not typically going to find breadfruit at BAIC's market. And this is the politics of food, right? Breadfruit is difficult to store. They like avocado. They be green, 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 and then you go use the bathroom and come back, and they rotten, right? So the storage is difficult. I don't think they are being grown commercially, although you may find people with a number of trees. So if she's looking for breadfruit, I'm going to tell her, hit up Fox Hill, right? Hit up Fox Hill Roundabout, hit up the Fox Hill Johnson Road area, or hit up the Cowpen Road area for breadfruit. Boy, the politics of food is serious, you know. Another text. He's getting rid of those who he know the noise in the market won't re-elect, and those unpopular by the people. Save me a bag of tamarind, Aaron. Tamarind is selling for $14 a pound, my brethren. You know what type of gift that is? I hope you're special to me. But I don't know, Stefan, if he is getting rid of people. We know the noise in the market won't re-elect, because we got an incumbent that was ratified that got up and told the people, like the whole country on internationally accessed television and medias, that they are considering changing a policy that is clearly illegal. And he never spoke about the nature, the pernicious nature of the abuse, or the pernicious nature of the breach of law and duty of care and trust, right? In fact, from he made that first statement about minding my own business for the first six years of the month and staying out of other people's business for the next 6 months of the year, I thought to myself, but you, sir, in this position, have a duty of care for every vulnerable person in the country. You don't have any time to mind your own business. And in fact, I mean, for me, I don't know. That's somebody who I would have figured out.
My question is, what are the standards? You know what I mean? Can't we wake up on a Tuesday morning and know what to expect from the leaders of our country? And I don't say that in direct offense to anyone, you know, just trying to be, I'm trying to be as tactful but as candid as possible. Whether or not our fearless leader feels as though he's getting rid of persons that likely won't be nominated, I almost feel there is a heightened sense of obligation by the sitting government to allow us to follow along with their process for what they want to do next. But my feelings aren't enough, and his feelings aren't enough, and the feelings of individual people as they are not enough. Mm-hmm. They need to come together so that there can be some standard by which we understand what is happening next. If there's a culture that is in place, or I don't know if there are any, well, clearly there mustn't be any rules on ratifying incumbents, and you are doing something that's completely different. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes seems to be tied around controversy, and sometimes you just don't really know why or what's going on. And then you have the embarrassment of some of these leaders who were already beginning to campaign and then realizing and having to release a statement saying, oh, well, we're going to stop because it seems I've been informed that I'm not going to be. So now there's this apparent, and this isn't the first time we've seen this apparent breakdown in communication. There's this breakdown, and it just makes you feel like these are the hands that I am in. No one would feel secure or safe in a kind of system where you figuring out in the news and the person who the news is about is supposed to be a national leader, and they're figuring out in the news, and sometimes it's being leaked by members of the public, or but before we could get it from what are the standards by which these processes are happening?
Look here, and the trust deficit just keeps growing and growing.
Precisely.
And in this political culture where we mimic the sort of local parenting dynamic where I am chief and y'all is cheering and listen and say what I do. But what we know about children is children make quick, sharp assessments of the environment. And if the boat is captainless, the children gonna take the wheel.
Yeah.
Children will lead if they see you ain't in charge or you don't know how to be in charge. And you got to do something to take hold of that.
My central message is always going to be these policies will help our people and these policies will help our leaders. Right. There have been countless embarrassments coming out of the House because of the way that simple things like communicating decisions or decision-making processes, which is the business of the people, Bahamas, the way, not just the decisions that are being made and being communicated to us during press conferences, the way, the rationale behind those decisions is absolutely the business of the people. Absolutely.
Show your work. You remember when you was in primary school?
Or yeah.
You remember with the teacher?
Uh-huh.
You get the correct answer, but you can't get an A because you didn't show your work?
Precisely.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You have to show the work because justice must also, sort of a separate principle, justice must not just be done, it must be seen to be done. And it don't matter that you said it was done. My mother said she didn't eat the mango. My mother said she didn't move the juju. That don't mean she didn't eat the mango or she didn't move the juju, right? It's at the point, it's at the point now that our trust sits wherever the Oban file sits. Right? Wherever y'all buried the three birds and the one goat, that is where our trust is also buried.
And on this topic of fairness, is it fair? So even if I briefly stand in defense of our sitting MPs and cabinet ministers, is it fair to them to not have a process by which they understand what's going to happen? Because they're in the public eye. They're doing interviews. They're talking to the press when they come out of the House. They are using their social media platforms to engage with their constituents. Is it fair to them when the system can't tell them or us or anyone what's next?
Yeah.
Is it fair to them when you can just say, oh, well, the prime minister told me or the prime minister decided?
But I show you what, an MP that doesn't understand the balance of obligations could easily get caught in that trap, right? Mm-hmm. An MP who thinks that their highest obligation is to the party that gave them the opportunity to run would never really consider the weight of that dilemma, right? It is unfair to them, right? But they, I think, have a duty. Like, a part of that is on them to go into this thing wholeheartedly.
Agreed.
Right? And so, for me, do you think it's time that we have a real school of politics where we train, like, a nonpartisan, connected to UB, maybe, because UB is connected to the government. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the relationship right now.
Yeah.
Right? But you never know. Mm. Is it time for a real school of politics? So when you bring me your resume as a candidate, because I am the employer, you the employee, if I see that there, I could say, okay, there's a certain degree of trust that I could put in this person that even if they did not completely grasp the full breadth of the principles involved, they are aware of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think something like that is certainly important, and not just for the representatives, but if you look at the state of our civic education, there's some of it sprinkled around in the national curriculum. I think for high school students, in the public education system there is a civics course. When I was in high school, I did it as an elective, but, you know, these courses aren't teaching anyone what they need to know. And the funny thing about you even saying that we are the employer and they are the employees, I feel like when we say that, it feels like, oh, we're telling a joke, like, you know, we're supposed to be the employers, haha. But because we don't really grasp what the Constitution says and how these processes are supposed to work, it'll always be a joke. And who is the joke on? Well, the joke is on us.
The joke is not on me. Listen, I am a conk, and I like being a conk. A conk is not a bad thing, right? The joke cannot be on me. Even though, like, the joke is on them. They don't get it yet, but the joke is on them. And that's what we, right? We got to stop feeling bad about ourselves in this dynamic.
We have to.
Yeah. But listen, so I'm going to read some text. And this text is important because I think this is from FNM Too Straight. That's what your name is now, Texter. FNM Too Straight.
Okay.
But because he texts often, reminding me that the FNM are going to win Too Straight, right?
Well, congratulations.
I'm not a gambling woman because I ain't got no money to gamble. And we're from Acklands, we don't do foolishness. But I read this. I am voting party because at the end of the day, leadership matters. Mr. Brave Davis and Mr. Christie have proven it's all for me, baby. FNM Too Straight. Well, I can tell you something on this note. I was surprised to see Fred Mitchell running again. I was hoping to see Fred Mitchell reappointed to the Senate because the Senate does not function the way it's supposed to. We keep putting these newbies, these neophytes, and these amateurs in politics in the Senate. We use it for political favors when really it's for elder statesmen and people who have a sufficient grasp of history and culture to add context to political decisions, but we keep putting children in there, and I don't mean like little babies, but political children.
Yeah.
And so I was hoping to see Mr. Mitchell form a school of politics, right? And help the PLP party expand and improve.
He'd be good for it, right. You know.
Kermit, is that a call or yeah? Okay. Caller, you are on the clock.
Pleasant good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
And, pleasant good morning to your guests in studio.
Good morning.
I am compelled, Aaron, to call because there are so many nuggets that has been expressed on this show from the beginning to now that really rang true in my spirit.
Yes, sir.
You know, this is one thing that I want to say publicly, so we all can understand, and I would like to hear your commentary after I would have already made my statement, and that is, you know, we tend to blame our politicians for everything, and in fact, we have elected them to lead us. The dilemma that we find ourselves in this country today is that the art of learning, and this is now where I'm going with this conversation, we have learned how to be corrupt. As a people, we have learned how to be a lackluster. We have learned how to accept mediocrity. And until we as a people begin to educate ourselves and upgrade ourselves to move away from these three main factors, what do we expect from our leaders? We have been indoctrinated into so many of these things that when so many of us today speak about truth and justice, it is not readily accepted because the norm that we have learned over all these decades is so entrenched that when someone breaks something to take the scale of your eyes to show you that there is better, but you believe that what you get now is the best you can get, it's going to be a hard road to change the heart of our people. And that is where the problem exists today. I'll close on this one note, and I've always said it, and I will continue to say it. Political parties are only here to divide the Bahamian people from getting the justice and food that we deserve. Because the leaders that we have appear not to believe in those two principles, truth and justice. They paint this picture, they throw the rum, they throw the alcohol, they throw the $20 or $50 in these T-shirts, and we the people, knowing full well that we are being taken advantage of, or even some that may not be aware that they're being taken advantage of, we readily accept these guys as heroes and continue to worship them. And until the day comes when we change the whole paradigm and get serious about saving this country and stop worshiping idols, which is these personalities, we as a people will never progress to the level we're supposed to progress. Thank you very much, Erin, for taking my call. Great show, and continue the great work.
Thank you very much, sir. Hopefully I could get Stephen Evans on tomorrow so we could interrogate the difference between politics and governance, right? Because these guys, I think genuinely a lot of these new guys get caught up in the fervor and the excitement and the empowerment of like winning an election, right?
Yeah.
And never, ever are able or shown how to transition into governance mode. Right? Like they get so caught up in the political culture, by the time they realize where they are, they're overwhelmed by it. And then it's politics time again, right? And so a part of it, I think, Carla, is helping people, including politicians, to make the distinction between politics and governance, right? And then another part of it is the cultural shift, right? The shift in perspective at a personal level. So I'm not sure if Mr. Evans could come back and join me yet, but maybe we'll continue that tomorrow. But I just want to continue this text from FNM Too Straight, because all he is saying is too straight. I mean, make some good points. The parties present a platform, and if the majority agrees with the party by voting for it, they can say the party. Like, that's what they can vote for. FNM is a better choice for this time. We have to overcome the trust deficit, but for me, as long as Brave and Fred leads the PLP, I can never trust them. And I could look here, a lot of people expressed those sentiments, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
And ahead of the last election, Rev Analytics ran a poll at the advance poll, right? Like they did a survey at the advance poll. And one of the things they talked about was how the PLP parties, the PLP party and the FNM party were like branded higher than their actual leaders. So like the parties, the leaders weren't bigger than the party. But for the DNA, the leader was bigger than the party, right? And in there, right, we need is an example or a lesson for MPs to understand the political culture and how intensively they're gonna have to focus on their personal agendas of integrity and good governance, right? That personal agenda to ensure that they don't become overwhelmed by the current political culture, or that they can go in and interrogate it, right, and shift it. But listen, that's a lot of words, and that was just me trying to entice you to come back to the show tomorrow to talk. Let me read some more text. Morning, the executive branch controls the legislative branch, which should never happen. That's right, because the separation of powers is a real constitutional principle.
Right.
The ministers are bound by cabinet rules to follow the conclusions of cabinet, whether they personally agree with the position or not. They are threatened with job loss if they speak for the people. Similarly, other MPs are given chairmanship position for their loyalty and silence. But a strong chairman, right? Like, so the chairman and the PM, like, we could work it out to use them against each other, right? Because we don't support bullying unless it's to free the people. Anyway, that's a joke. Don't take that seriously. We don't support bullying at all, period. And then I got another text, say, FNM Too Straight. So maybe that was not FNM Too Straight guy. But FNM Too Straight guy, you got to step up your game, because people bring in commentary with this. So, Kermit, is that a last call? No? Anyway, Stefan, I think that was the universe and maybe your great-great-great-grammy telling you come back to the show tomorrow with these green lights. Thank you very much for joining us. I think these are the sorts of things we're gonna be you're going to be talking about on your Freedom Fridays Let's
Definitely,
Talk MP's table. So hopefully I'll see you back here tomorrow, 10 a.m., so we could continue this lively conversation. And hopefully I'll have some juju or tamarind with me in the studio. You're listening to On the Clock with Erin Green. Unleashed with LeVan Miller is up next on 96.9 FM. Have a great day, Bahamas.